How would you say the problem of violence in Providence has changed since the Institute was established in 2003?
There's some good news and some bad news. I think the good news is we had to be every night on Hanover Street, for example. The Asian crews were fighting, and there were multiple groups on Hanover Street alone in the West End. We constantly had issues. Chad, parts of the east side, south side, had some very long-term conflict that people say cannot be resolved. And I think there's a lot of community work in collaboration with the Institute and the partnership with law enforcement to become a larger awareness. I think one of the goals, more people got involved in a systematic way in helping people, all the way from early prevention all the way to the intervention we have to do. The bad news is in the last 5 years, it's no secret, we were cut quite significantly in half, as well as the police were cut. And that took some of the momentum out. Some of the most difficult parts for me was really that I spent the last 5 years a lot more time on fundraising and just sustaining the people who work rather than lending a hand to reducing the violence. Though it created an opportunity for the people at the Institute to really do the day-to-day work. So there's also a blessing in disguise.
How does the Institute's budget in dollars compare now to its height?
It's about half a million less. I think it was at $1.8 million, and it's gone down. But also, mission had to expand. We're dealing with, we inherited a victim services unit, which deals with any homicide in the state of Rhode Island. Also, we work with Lifespan, and we respond to shootings beyond the state. So there's been a bit of a mission creep, whereas before, the budget we had, we really focused on the street work and nonviolence trainings in schools. Again, under new leadership, that's going to be looked at. We need to increase the outreach workers. I think the governor is very interested in how do we teach nonviolence in schools. So there's different things we need to do. And the last few years, we really tried to develop also an employment program. We always had a summer program, but we really realized that for people to change, they need a year-round help with soft skills and other skills in getting into employment cycle. It helps the taxpayers when you have someone who costs you money as a shooting victim in a hospital or they're incarcerated to someone who actually pays taxes, pays the rent, etc. So it's in the interest of all of us, conservative and liberals, to have as many people enter the economy. And that's something that really, I hope, is the next push here in Rhode Island with the Institute.
There were 8 street workers at the Institute when the Institute started in 2003. How many are there now?
Then we went up to 17. Now we're down to 5. It's significant because, again, they're responding also to shootings from out of Providence. One of the street workers works in Pawtucket. We used to be in many of the schools on a day-to-day basis, stop a lot of the conflicts when they start. Some of the gangs started around schools, and we were able to intervene and stop that, make it fizzle. I think some great leaders used to say, you cannot do more with less. You know, it's a fantasy. So we really were struggling with that. I don't want to sound negative, but there's a lot to be proud of. I hope that the new leadership, both in the state, in our city, as well as private donors and our board, they're going into a strategic planning, will have a fresh look at how do we sustain this very important work.
You've always said it's difficult to quantify the impact of the work done by the Institute, because if a shooting, a homicide does not occur, how do you quantify that? Can you talk about the impact that the Institute has had over time?
Even beyond that, some people who say that we saved their lives, that we planted their seed in a visit to jail or teaching them nonviolence, I'm not sure we deserve all the credit. I think we work with humans as they mature, as their frontal lobes develop, as they're tired of the violence. So with marketing and fundraising and everything, everyone claims success all the time. I think we all need to be a little bit more humble. I think we did our part. We tried never to give up on anybody. There were some young people that I thought are really heading into a complete disaster. I think the police thought so too. People on the streets thought so too. And they found the wherewithal to change. Sometimes they give us some credit, and I think our method has been to love them, to have some serious conversation with them on choices, as well as advocate for them when it looked like the whole world is raining on them. It's what you would do with your family. It's what you would do in a community if you care. We're not the only one doing it, but we are focused on those who are involved in violence for the sake of victims, for the sake of those involved in violence, and for the sake of the larger community.
You told me last week this is the right time for you to make a change in your life and to do something different. What makes this the right time?
Again, not to harp on it, but the struggle financially here at the Institute has worn down on me in a limited market. I can say that I almost know everyone with means in Rhode Island and with power. And yet I was not able to reach the goals that I set for myself. I wanted to have an endowment. I wanted that we will be treated like professional doctors, that we do prevention and intervention. I wanted us to be treated in a way that people will respect the professionalism of what we try and do here with victims, with those involved with violence, with job training. And I felt that I carried it only that far. I often thought, I always use military examples, I apologize on that, but the Israeli army is famous to have a charismatic leader followed by a really good bureaucrat. And I mean it in the best of terms, that maybe the Institute would benefit from a next leader that can really do easily contracts with the state and, just sort of a more professional way of doing work. With me, it was always, let's go and make a difference, was a lot of inspiration, but sometimes there's a weakness in my leadership in just structures, and I think we need to put it on a more certain footing. So I felt I carried it as far as I could. For a long time, I even stayed maybe a bit too long, because some of my heroes around the country, I've been with their organizations for 25 years, and I thought maybe you need to go through hard times to really see the vision for the next steps, but that's not to be in this case.
To push back a little bit against what you're saying, you do have a somewhat unique background. You're a former Israeli Army sergeant. You're comfortable talking on tough streets and in the boardroom, and I think you remain the same person regardless of the setting. Is this a major setback for the Institute that you are departing?
I hope not. Transition's always risky. I'm someone who is a student of history. Sometimes people make choices and they don't work out. The supermarket I buy in, there's a lot of very poor people, and things, I can see it on their faces. Things didn't quite work out the way they wanted to. So I'm well aware that I might not succeed in Chicago and that there could be challenges here at the Institute. At the same time, I also operated here not in a vacuum. I've seen a lot of leaders of nonprofits who had skills that I did not have, that are very structured, they run meetings in real great ways, they respond to grants on time, they understand the subtleties of what are the funding opportunities there and how to structure programs. So I'm not just selling a happy story there. I really do think there's a lot of skills I did not have that another leader for this institute can really build upon. We build a great system. We work with hospital, with emergency room. We work with law enforcement, work with school. We teach nonviolence. We respond to victims. We work with funeral homes. There's a really amazing system that has been built, and those are the great achievements, I think, of the last 14 to 15 years. Nonviolence now speaks the language of the 21st century, not just lunch counter integration, but really today gang violence, police and community relations. So there's been a lot that has been done that for the next leader you can build upon and really put it on a good footing.
Tanny Gross, thank you for sitting down with us and best wishes to you.
Thank you very much. I love Rhode Island. I'll be back here every other week. It's an amazing state, and I hope we all keep pushing it forward.